Welcome to the Future of Medicine podcast, where we believe that feeling great and living a long time is possible and that your healthcare should help you get there. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Wenzel. My hope is simple, that this show will help you along your journey to becoming the healthiest, strongest, and most powerful version of you possible. Now, let's jump into the show. Hey, everybody. Before we jump into this episode, I wanted to give just a second of context. This episode is going to be a different format than what you're used to. This is actually a recording of a podcast that I did with the local EO entrepreneur organization here in Nashville. And although it is a business-related podcast that I was invited on, I was struck by how immediately we went right into health-related things. Certainly, we take a journey on my story, starting as a young life, my road less traveled into medical school, what led me to be an entrepreneurial physician, which is interesting to relive that journey coming out of the sick care model into the healthcare model that I am now currently in, and a really thoughtful discussion around health, wealth, and happiness. I really hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, Robert here with The Decision, EO Nashville's podcast for entrepreneurs in the entrepreneur organization. We help entrepreneurs tell their story of triumph, overcoming that difficult decision. Maybe you brought it to a forum for help. We like to share those stories for others who may also be in a state where they just need help with a decision. With me today is Dr. Aaron Wenzel. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
I got an opportunity to see you speak at the 90 is the new 60 Forum Summit on health. And man, likely the most powerful EO event in terms of overall value.
Really?
Because it's dealing with health.
Yeah.
And I felt in that time with everyone that there were a lot of like desire to know health in a world where health is kind of this thing you don't know the truth. And having EO members tell truth to us because they have nothing to sell us other than facts about what we should be aware of our health. I think it was a very powerful experience for a lot of people to hear things that they needed to hear.
Yeah, it was an honor to be there. I was fortunate enough to be asked to be a part of the planning. And so seeing it kind of come from ideas to the full delivery was really special. And certainly I recognized the opportunity to speak some things that I have seen, experienced, that I actively manage personally and with my members, in some way extracting the lesson and being able in a short, compact, drink from a fire hose kind of way, hear the nuts and bolts, write down what resonates with you and go take some action. It was really neat. I reflect back. Been several weeks now, and it's still a little bit of a buzz, and there are still people reaching out to me and asking me and questions, and prompted some curiosity and some conversations that I think people need to have. And not a lot of people, I would say, have a sense that they have access to conversations that are meaningful around their health. Mm. And if that event could somehow open up a door and a pathway to a conversation, it was worth it 10 times.
Oh, I absolutely. I know for a fact there was a lot of aha moments for people talking about these little tiny tips about health that they just don't stop and really listen. And by having people in the room kind of just with that energy start to go aha too. And I think it's a powerful opportunity for all of us in EO to pay more attention to our health and to have people that can actually navigate with us on what that. Can you talk a little bit more about, first off, why did you become a doctor?
How long do we have? my experience at becoming a physician seemed to be unique amongst my physician colleagues as we were training. I grew up an athlete, an academic underachiever perpetually. I always say high school is, my memory of high school is a few random sporting events and some dances. Like, I completely, utterly punted high school. High school just ended. I never took the SATs, ACTs. It just ended. And that next Saturday, I was at the beach. I grew up in San Diego. I just was uninspired. And it created a real challenge for me. Because in 1992, when you graduate high school, if you're not going to be a pro athlete, which is my fantasy, what I wanted to do, when that doesn't happen, the only way you truly map success is through academics. The irony there. But I took the road less traveled. My journey sent me into the military, as a young man. And I really grew up and had this revelation that I couldn't feel sorry for myself, that nobody else was feeling sorry for myself. In the moment that I could just take ownership of my life, I could stop the pity party. And I needed to figure out a way to map through school. And the game changer for me was somebody told me, oh, so you mean you never figured out the school game? I said, what do you mean school game? They're like, oh, don't you know it's a game? I mean, I'm an athlete and I understand sports and games. So like, well, tell me more. And they helped me see it really is a game. And I just never learned the rules. Oh. And immediately I had a light switch go off. And as soon as I got out of the military, I pursued my academics, through a community college and found my way into medical school through just grit, determination, and a lot of good fortune. And so I always say medicine found me. It was not on my radar until I was 26, 27. I just figured I needed to go to school because that's what you needed to do to be successful. And I fell in love with chemistry. So as a business major, which I was at the time, I'm taking all of these high level chemistry, organic chemistry, anatomy, physiology, genetics. And they're like, what is wrong with you? Why are you doing all these sciences? And I'm like, well, I'd love to be a doctor, but that's for smart kids. And I just need to get through. I just need to get through school. So, I pursued things, tasted, didn't like it, pursued, tasted, didn't like it, pursued, tasted, didn't like it, until virtually the only thing left standing was, Aaron, what are you going to do with this? Like, your path is clearly going towards medicine. Are you going to give it a real run or not? And so I did. And so that's kind of how I got in.
Sounds like you had some self-doubt how smart you were. Well, you were like, you mentally weren't strong enough in your mind, and you made a switch somehow that you found that confidence, or what was it?
You know, I'm not sure. I think I never internally had a conversation with myself that I'm not intelligent. I always felt like a jack of all trades, that I had this interesting confidence where, as long as I was motivated, I was very confident that I could figure out pretty much anything. But I also simultaneously didn't have any documentation supporting this idea that academically I'm smart. And so it's kind of this weird.
You like fall into the, I'm an athlete.
Yeah.
Versus an academic. And those two can't both exist.
Yeah. And you can be smart, but are you really that smart? Cause you can't get good grades.
Yeah.
And so it was a weird, I'm now almost 50. And as I look back on the academic, you know, the way we educate our young people, it's a real problem. And it's generally a one size fits all. And there are a lot of ways to demonstrate intelligence and resourcefulness and creativity and unique talents, that often get overlooked, because it doesn't fit the mold of how we're trying to deploy education. Mm. And I got lucky. you know, I look back and there were a lot of ways that my life could have gone totally different directions. In some ways I was ill-equipped to be an adult, and however, it's hard to not look back and say, yeah, but I was kind of given everything I needed and I blazed my own trail, and I actually wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, it just didn't look like everyone else's. And so there was a process to have to be okay with that and find my own path. It made me awful resilient, and very rugged. And, you know, that's kind of the shortest version of the story.
And so you've had this transformation into becoming a doctor. Then when was the transformation into entrepreneurship?
Well, I've always been entrepreneurial, you know, trading baseball cards, or, you know, always looking for, I've been business minded my whole life. My journey into becoming an entrepreneurial physician was really one of, I would like to one day have my own practice. But that version of it was far more like my version of the current healthcare delivery model. But once I got into the model, being trained in it and then practicing in it and in residency, I knew that wasn't going to be my path. I just could not do it. It was economically bankrupt, in many ways, morally bankrupt. I just didn't want to be a part of it. And so I finished my family medicine residency. I was moonlighting in the ER, had a new skill with emergency medicine, started doing emergency medicine, never took a family medicine job. And kind of reluctantly, I leaned into my entrepreneurial tendencies and slowly started building my practice one by one by one by one until it was pretty obvious I was decent at it. And the market seemed to like it. I was finding a ton of joy and satisfaction from practicing medicine this way. And then in April of 2021, my side hustle had become the thing.
Oh, wow.
And I retired from the ER, as my kids say.
That's not long ago.
No. I mean, so we've been in practice for 7 years or so. I did emergency medicine for 13 years, ran the department for the last almost five.
Wow.
So it's a unique skill set. The emergency room really, allowed me to be my jack of all trades. You know, I don't know what's coming in the door. I'm the only doc in the place oftentimes. And you just have to kind of be able to react to a lot of variables that are out of your control. And that had kind of been my whole life. And so I thrived in that environment and really fortified some skills. But yeah, just, I won't say I was a reluctant entrepreneur. I would just say that the actual entrepreneurial expression that I have always identified with was birthed out of reluctancy. But I'm very grateful for it. I cannot imagine a life without the way I get to practice medicine. It's plucked right from my dreams.
Oh, that's great. Now, EO, when did that appear to you as, hey, I'm interested in that? What sparked interest in EO for you? You know, the old Aaron and the new Aaron.
I had an encounter with a member of mine who, once we finished what we were talking about, he said, hey, have you ever heard of EO? And I said, no. He said, well, you should check it out. It's really great. I've been a part of it for 20 something years. I think you'd find it useful. And, so I looked into it. It was very intriguing. I didn't meet the criteria. I was early in building, but I kind of earmarked that as, once I hit that milestone, that's something I'd like to pursue. And then with my eyes open to it, I started noticing other people that were in EO, and they were speaking very highly about it. And so once I had the opportunity, I moved into it, and it's been great. My form's great. You know, as everyone who's in EO, you hope experiences, they become kind of an extended family, and there's a really unique shared experience there. So EO's been great. Love it.
What would you say the biggest challenge that you've had specifically in your business as you've navigated entrepreneurship in a few years, what's been the biggest decision you were faced needing to make that you maybe had struggled?
I think it was in the very beginning, probably not dissimilar from a lot of entrepreneurs when they take that first jump. Will people see value in what I do? And will I be able to deliver on the things I believe I can? And then is it enough to actually build something to provide for me and my family? And then that progresses into, is it just me, or is there a way to create an actual business instead of a job? And can we hire other people to duplicate what we've been able to do? And these have all been groundbreaking milestones for me personally, being able to prove that it is something that people like, and that I do love, that it is, good enough to take care of me and my family. It is not just about Aaron Wenzel. It is about a certain set of skills and a certain environment and a certain heart, that other people can bolt on their professional lives and contribute to the greater vision that we have. I think those are just overcoming those curiosities and doubts and fears that, is it going to be enough, or is there room to take it to the next level, whatever that might be?
I am sure a lot of your patients are coming from an entrepreneurial background, just naturally, because the people you're going to attract are kind of a lot like you. What have you noticed about maybe providing care for an entrepreneur is different than maybe the average person?
The core needs are the same, but the delivery and the methods are vastly different. The biggest thing I discovered was that my ideal member is me. I mean, that I'm 50, I have a family, I have a business. I'm trying to figure out how to be an all-time great husband, all-time great dad, all-time great leader, all-time great physician. And I'm trying to stay in shape, and I'm trying to kick the door down of 150. And I have all of these things. I'm trying to figure it out also. And there's something kind of, I've noticed, special about just being true to what I'm trying to achieve. It tends to attract people who have similar life positions and potentially even life goals. And there's a really nice marrying of these values and goals and communication styles and prioritization. But I think the number one thing that entrepreneurs, business owners, executives, which tend to populate the majority of my membership panel, what makes them different than the general population is they not only recognize the value in having a person that they can reach out to in their time of need, who knows them by name. And that speed, when you have a need, is the game. I don't care if it's a hangnail or a stroke. If the experience by someone is that I'm worried, having someone to help them answer the question, should I worry, yes or no, is really valuable. But they also have the means to invest in that type of relationship. The general population, as I have experienced it through all of my training and all of my experience in providing medicine, both in a training center and at an ER where it didn't matter, nobody had cost concerns, really. I mean, you just come in and you had a thing, we just did it. I'm not quite sure everyone shares the same value in speed and details and follow through and outside the box think, critical thinking. There's a gross deficiency in the ability to be a critical thinker, even within my physician colleagues, in big healthcare systems, because there's a formula of how to do it and we're done thinking. Rarely are there conversations that sound like, hey, is what we believe to be true, is it still true?
Wow.
I mean, It sounds crazy, but oftentimes I would notice with some of my physician colleagues as I'm going through some things, and I notice that they're doing it a certain way, and I'll say, well, I'm just curious, why are you doing it that way? And almost the universal response is, that's the way I was trained. Yeah, but we have new ways that are better. Like, we used to have square wheels.
Like, yeah.
Now we have round wheels. And physicians tend to be risk averse. Physicians are under a tremendous medical legal pressure to not make mistakes. They are oftentimes vastly overworked through volume of patient care, volume of needless documentation and clicking buttons and digital sand traps. Lots of pressure for more volume, for less reimbursement. It's a declining model at scale. There are a few isolated people who are still in the model who are thriving, but you know, there's not a lot of bandwidth to continue to learn, to continue to think, and like, is managing diabetes this way still the best way to do it? I know it's the way I did 25 years ago in training, and I'm comfortable with it because it's how I do it, but I don't have the 50 to 100 hours to do a deep dive in this new thing because I'm just trying to keep it together. I got to have something to give to myself, something to give to my family. And it's a real, I used to be angry, but I've come to this place of sympathy. I wish it was different, and I hope it can be different for them. But in the end, you know, many experience a physician that is not satisfied, and the patient experience on average is not super satisfying. I think what I would say is if there was a phrase that embodies what the essence of what I'm able to do, it's that the only stakeholders in our relationship are the doctor and the patient. And when the doctor-patient relationship, those two individuals are the only stakeholders, it is a beautiful, beautiful foundation for meaningful work. And outside, you have to go outside of stakeholders, which means outside of hospital systems, outside of insurance, outside of, again, there are some people who are fortunate to navigate in a way where there's still meaningful doctor-patient relationship, but it's very difficult to be an advocate for one, each other, when you have to pander to check writers who you have no relationship with.
Yeah, and I bet it's a bit different too with the style of medicine that you're under, where you have a model where they pay you while you're healthy.
Right.
You know, and back in the day, that was how medicine was delivered. You paid your doctor while you were well, and back in the Greek times, and that model's kind of coming back, you know?
I think so.
And I think it's coming back too, because I think a lot of people, at least in the entrepreneurship community, I see a lot of people making an investment in their health.
Yeah.
Through exercise, through nutrition, through just, they're just trying to take care of themselves. Whereas in, you know, maybe the experience that you had in you saw a lot of people in the ER that have not taken care of themselves for many, many years. And then they have a dramatic event that happens that they're now face to face with you. And so it's got to feel a little bit different to take care of patients that are also taking care of themselves.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
No, it's healthcare.
Yeah.
What we actually call healthcare currently is nothing more than sick care. Like, the model is sick care. Everything is built around disease management. There is no incentive whatsoever on any level to prevent disease. And all systems and processes and procedures and surgeries and treatments and follow-ups and centers are all built around a disease and how to really treat it super well. And I understand how we got here. It was not the intent. But we have at scale a robust, if you're sick, the US is a great place to be. People from all over the world with cardiovascular disease go to the Cleveland Clinic. It's the best heart hospital on the planet. But they can't do anything for you, nor do they do anything for you if you want to prevent heart disease. Because the model's not set up for disease prevention. And so health insurance, it's called health insurance, but it's not all that useful if you're healthy. It's only useful, maybe, if you're sick enough, which is what people are starting to experience now because the cost of it's going way up. And even if you want to use it, it counts towards your deductible. Most people have moved towards a high deductible. We've all effectively become cash payers anyway.
Yeah.
And I, to your point though, it is a dream to work with people who believe in healthcare. The trainer that they hire, the gym membership, the home gym equipment, the higher quality food that they invest in, the better bed, the sleep tracking technology, the fitness tracking. These are all healthcare. This is self-advocacy. And this is what I teach, but I just add the medical side of it to that. And it's a really wonderful way to practice. I mean, we do sick care. We do find people who are sick. But only then do we do sick care. Otherwise, we're doing health care.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious. I did a little snooping on your YouTube channel, yep. Brentwood MD on YouTube. Great channel.
Thank you.
And I was not expecting to hear conversations about purpose and goal setting and personal development.
Yeah.
And which really intrigued me because I wonder the correlation between a person who's in their purpose. Is there a correlation between health and living in purpose?
No question. Yeah. I mean, well, I wasn't expecting that. That's a good one. I think Tony Robbins is the one that, I don't know where, if he got it from somewhere, but he said something like the ultimate failure in life is success without fulfillment. And my observation is that it doesn't matter what topic we're talking about, success, relational, economic, health. If you get to that place where you have defined success and you do not feel a sense of fulfillment, it's kind of like failure times 1,000. My conviction personally is that when it's all said and done, and I've seen thousands of deaths, probably hundreds of ways to die. And I can assure you, I've only seen one kind of good death, only one, and that's pain-free and at peace.
Mm.
Every other variable that is experienced at the end is less than ideal. And when I noticed people at peace and comfortable in that twilight, my observation was that they either had us, that peace was rooted in a lack of regret. And my sense is it's because as they reflect back over their life, they're judging and they're measuring their life and they're happy with it.
Mm.
Conversely, as you look back in your life, as you're in the twilight and you're measuring it and you don't like the report, it is the opposite of peaceful. And I think we have to begin with the end in mind. I don't know how you map a successful, because life, like success is a net score game, right? I mean, how do you judge whether somebody's a good dad? Well, you have to kind of wait till the end. I mean, there are suggestions and data points along the way that you're up at the seventh inning or you're down in the seventh inning, but in the end, it ain't over till it's over and the story will be written. I mean, this is kind of legacy stuff. And so I find that the human experience involves all of these individual facets that need to be prioritized based on value systems, based on what you want to achieve in the end. And one of those is health. There's economics, there's relationship, there's impact, there's purpose, there's all of these things. There's not an infinite list of things, but there's a handful of really essential things that most people are going to weigh heavily at the end. And
have you read the 12 Regrets of the Dying?
No. Familiar?
It's these hospice nurses in Australia.
Ooh.
Surveyed dying patients and collected tons of data on what are people regret as they pass. And it's a lot of the things you would assume. I wish I had spent more time with my loved ones.
Right.
I wish I had been more honest with others. I wish I had lived my own life, not through the eyes of another. Mm-hmm. The one that always gets me is I wish I had lived up to my potential. And when I think about that, that is more powerful than anybody on stage telling me how to be, because they're not selling me anything. Mm-hmm. This is someone who's on their deathbed and they're like, you should be aware of this feeling before you go. You don't want these feelings.
Yes.
And so by knowing, and I almost read those 12 regrets probably every month or find an opportunity to read them out loud to somebody else. Mm. And it's made a dramatic impact on shaping. Okay. I need to recalibrate. Mm-hmm. I'm focused on the wrong things. And, you know, in order to live up to my potential, I need to have my energy. I need to have my health.
Yep.
And then when you go down to, well, what am I actually doing here? What's my purpose? And when I have found that I'm in flow, time doesn't exist.
Right.
I'm living in a 5D world when I'm living in purpose. Mm-hmm. And that has just been a powerful thing for me to like reset me. And I'm sure, you know, it's pretty frightening to think that a lot of people in this world in pain. That's kind of scary to actually face that.
I would go so far as to say, I probably shouldn't say I wouldn't be surprised if there was a data set somewhere that said most people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's mostly anxiety provoking. The usual experience I hear is I'm scared. I'm nervous. I'm not done. The things are not right yet. I still have left to do. It seems to be more of an anomaly to find someone who's okay.
Mm.
And I just think that's a really powerful thing. And I think unique to the entrepreneurial high achiever, big game hunters, like I have all these different Wenzelisms that I use for my high achievers. But high drive folks, I think the idea of noticing that you didn't become your best self would be uniquely painful.
Or take so long to figure out who you are.
Right. It really does. And I don't know that there's proper attention early enough and often enough for people to begin this process. I've been on my own journey and it's taken me almost a decade to really get answers to, Aaron, you're a doctor. Who are you though?
Yeah.
What does Aaron actually want? Why is success important to you? Why does it matter? Why should you grow? Why work out? If you just ask yourself 3, 4, 5 layers of questions, you get to some root cause stuff pretty quickly. The bad news is it's hard to get to the answer. The good news is I really think it's the unlock. Because if you can connect with that purpose and what your ideal self looks like, the way he would behave, the way he would think, the way he would invest, the way he would give, the way he would love, it gives you the horizon to always be watching to align yourself towards this ideal version so that in the end you look back and say, I gave it a great run.
Exactly.
It certainly involves health. And oftentimes people who come into my world they have great marriages, their businesses are incredibly successful, they're household names, many of them, yet they're 80 pounds overweight. How is that possible? How can someone who demonstrates such ability to achieve, how can weight elude you? It's a fascinating thought exercise for me. And I start asking some questions about how much attention do you give to it? How much not how much do you obsess about it or worry about it, but how much time, energy, attention, resources are you allocating towards this thing that is underperforming based on your goals? And it's often very little to nothing. Meanwhile, your marriage is good. Well, how much do you invest in your marriage? Well, a lot. How often do you tell your wife you love her? Every day. How often do you care about your kids? Do you think about them every day or just like sometimes? No, all the time. Well, your business is thriving. How often are you looking at your dashboard? How often are you? Well, all the time. And I often say, like, and I can use a lot of business analogies, you know, going and getting your annual physical is equivalent, and thinking that's going to map to some optimal health outcome is the equivalent to looking at last year's tax returns in order to manage your business on a weekly, daily, monthly, quarterly basis. You need a dashboard. Mm. What's the culture? How are the sales? How are the leads? What's the follow through? What's the stick rate? What's retention? What's like all of these things, they matter. And businesses that thrive, they have eyes on all that stuff. Mm. It's fascinating to me that with pillars of health, we don't have eyes on sleep. We don't have eyes on fitness. We don't have eyes on your glucose, which is in my world, that's the holy grail.
That was a big topic of the biggest takeaway I heard and I shared with my forum is having a glucose monitor as a measure just to know.
Even if you're totally normal, yeah. You verify that you don't have blind spots, but you also might uncover some learning like, oh, wow, sweet potatoes and baked potatoes. For me, I notice no difference in my glucose. And everyone's a little bit uniquely different, but all roads lead to what does your blood glucose level do? How long does it stay where it is? That is, in my estimation, the most critical, other than not smoking. Like if you're smoking, stop smoking immediately. Like then it's the number one cause of preventable death on the planet. Like just stop. Outside of not smoking, delaying diabetes as long as possible is the most important singular thing any human being could do to live a long, vibrant life. Nothing even comes close. It is the most significant disease on the planet. Nothing will outpace it worldwide in the next 20 years. It is the gateway disease to everything you don't want, like heart disease, cancer, probably Alzheimer's, dementia. Not quite super solid on that yet, but there's a lot of smoke coming from this diabetes type 3, really being Alzheimer's, obstructive sleep apnea, chronic pain, depression, cognitive decline, all these things.
And it's all back to sugar.
It's all energy mismanagement.
Yeah. And what language do you use with your patients about sugar? Like, is that... Because that's really front and center. That's the killer of all killers, is it not?
What?
Sugar.
Yeah. The language I would use is that no matter what food you consume or activity you partake in, if we really want eyes on a dashboard metric that will give you reliable predictive ability of where you're mapping, it's what are the foods you're eating and what are the behaviors you're doing? What are they doing to your blood sugar? And unless you have eyes on that, you cannot know with certainty. There are some people who are completely allergic to carbohydrates. Not really, but they're in the sense of they could eat an apple and their blood sugar goes through the roof. That's a problem. It's not the apple's fault. The apple's just, apple's not good or bad or right. Apple's just an apple.
Just different in different people.
It's different in different people. But what we do know is whatever you're consuming, you can think it's great. But if you're creating a glucose spike on the back end and that glucose spike is happening all the time and you become resistant to insulin and that glucose goes even higher, you are mapping towards diabetes regardless of how we feel about what we're doing. It's a total blind spot. That's why I'm so bullish on the ability to be able to see, even if your perception is you're metabolically pristine, put a glucose monitor for 2 weeks. I do it from time to time. Mm. I didn't find anything.
Did it change your diet and behavior in the
tweaks.
way,
which is great. Cause this is what good coaching would do. Near immediate feedback. You adjust, tinker, eat a little earlier, do a little movement here, change the order of this. Oh, when I do this, you just notice. And that feedback, it's the most powerful tool to trigger behavior change that feels good to the individual because they're the one who's being informed and they're changing their behavior. Instead of do this, do that, don't do this, you just figure it out. So I think, I'm not sure how we got on glucose, but I almost always end up on glucose because it's...
Well, it was a major topic. And of the event,
it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And if you're super healthy and it's not a big deal, do it 2 week. You might learn a couple things about yourself that might tweak the way you decisions you make. And every once in a while, I'll put it on there as a spot check. I think it's a wonderful rhythm, just like an audit on the most important thing.
So let me change direction a little bit in terms of EO and form, your form experience. If you were with a brand new EO member, knowing what you know about EO today, what would you like to let them know about? What experience would you like to share with them to help their own journey in EO be better?
What would I share with them to encourage them to give it a try?
No, a new member that would join, what advice would you give them to help them on their journey in EO to have a better experience?
Oh, I see. For me, I think having an idea of what you would like to get out of EO is a useful place to start. I knew for me personally, what I was looking for was, just to be in a room of unique individuals who had unique talents and skills and situations, yet were making a sacrifice to be in there with their busyness. And for the most part, were managing family life, business life, and personal life while maintaining leadership in as a visionary in their company. And that was just a room I craved. I found that it was hard to find. And my wife grows weary of hearing about business stuff. She's a trooper and she's amazed.
Imagine that.
She's brilliant.
You're not alone, my friend.
I know. She's like, oh, can we not talk about business tonight? I'm like, okay, what do you want to talk about? Football? No. So it gave me, an outlet, which has, been good. I would just tell somebody, having an idea of what you might want to extract could be useful, but even if you don't, just play all in.
I love that. You know, we have four core values at EO, and I'm going to read them all out loud, and I'd like you to make commentary on the one core value that most resonates with you.
Okay.
In regards to this, these are the core values of EO: trust and respect, thirst for learning, think big, be bold, and together we grow.
What was the second one?
Thirst for learning.
Yeah, that's mine.
Yeah.
I have noticed that I'm drawn to people. I find myself disinterested in relationship with people who demonstrate that they're done learning.
Oh man. Oh, that resonates with me. I almost like my brain shuts off and I'm just,
and you can hear it pretty quickly. You certainly see it in social media. There is a lack of openness in their tone. It is settled. I have planted my flag and I am basically declaring to the world that I am no longer influenceable in this topic. It's over. And even if I happen to agree with that person's thesis in the micro, it is nauseating to me. I just can't understanding the vulnerabilities of the human brain and the biases that we are all vulnerable to, and the siloing and the echo chambers and the confirmation bias that we can all be influenced by. I like rooms where people are respectful truth seekers and who are interested in honoring other smart people who came to a different conclusion that they did, and curious how they came to that conclusion. That speaks to me. I have an opinion, and here's how I got there, but I'm curious, Robert, you're a good thinker. And we don't see eye to eye on this. Actually, we see opposite. What helped you come to that conclusion? Because I came to, maybe I'm blind to something.
Mm.
It's an intellectual humility that I crave. So that resonates with me a lot.
Mm. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Inviting
health into the conversation in EO. Thank you for sharing with us, and thank you for the event that you helped pull together for all of us. It was a big topic.
If I could just say a closing thing for anyone who's listening, if one person can hear the following statement, it's important to say. You might spend your whole life building wealth. The moment you lose your health, you'd give it all up.
Mm.
In a second. Don't forget to incorporate health into your strategy. Because it would be a shame to exit 2-3 decades early because you didn't invest in that. Nobody rallies. I'm like an anti-rallier. It's seductive. I understand how it can be like, once we get over the thing, it's got to start today. Something. It's the great equalizer.
Mm.
And there are some things that you can be told that no amount of check writing will fix. And just be thoughtful about that and understand that we're all vulnerable. And having eyes on it early can often be the difference between a scary thing that happened to you that you had to go through that you got through, or a scary thing that happened and then there was a bad outcome. So hope that motivates someone to do something about it.
I think it does. Thank you. Thank you so much. If you've been watching, this is The Decision. We bring up real topics. Because obviously health is wealth. And today we got an opportunity to spend some time with some deep questions about what are we doing here? If you have not heard about EO, Entrepreneur Organization, we have the largest chapter in the United States, over 350 members, just like Aaron here, deep thinkers gathering together for that thirst for learning. That's what we do. If you have any interest, you can visit us at eonashville.com. Thanks for watching and have a fantastic rest of your week.
Thanks for listening to the Decision Podcast by Nashville EO. We'll see you again next time, and be sure to click subscribe to get future episodes.
I want to thank you so much for your attention. Listen, I don't take it for granted. It means the absolute world to me. You can find out more about today's episode at brentwoodmd.com/podcast. There you'll find the show notes, all the related links to this episode, and tons of other resources. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. And if you've already subscribed, then it would mean so much to me if you left a review. If you think we'd be a good fit to work together, or you would just simply like to know more about the concierge services that I provide my private clients, email us at membership@brentwoodmd.com. And now for the obligatory disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the giving of medical advice, as no doctor-patient relationship has been formed. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should seek the advice of their own medical professional providers.